Hey, everybody, it's Barry from the What Podcast.
Hey, it's Russ.
Hey, it's Brian, and we are giving away two tickets to Bonnaroo 2024. These are GA Plus, and they include camping. Russ, how do people get qualified?
We want to hear your top artists to play on the Bonnaroo 2024 lineup.
Call 423-667-7877 and tell us who we should check out. It's the What Podcast. Thanks.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So, what does a podcast about music festivals do when there are no music festivals? We talk about petting Bill Murray, of course. Maybe even a dab of Woodstock 99 chatter. And, of course, always, always talking about PBR. A bevy of potpourri today on the What Podcast. Lord Taco, Barry Corder, Brad Steiner. It starts right now. You're always trying to do your best. Don't worry about what happens next. Cause it never ends. It's just begun. We crash into the setting sun. Welcome to the What Podcast, Lord Taco, Barry Corder, I'm Brad, a podcast about music festivals, music industry, inside baseball, and hair.
It's a good day.
Yeah. Is it? For who?
Room, it's a good day. Look at that.
Yeah. So I want to start because I know we've got a lot of things to get into. By the way, nice to see you guys. I haven't seen you
great
in forever.
To see you.
I'm so happy to be back.
A full house.
I want the most important thing, though, to talk about first and foremost is PBR has a new can.
Yeah.
Uh oh.
What do you mean?
What? Okay. All right. Let me back up for a second. So, Barry, Taco sends me a picture the other night of PBR in a new can, a whole new designer can.
And he's happy about it or not happy?
That's what I'm trying to find out. Taco, your official review of the new can.
Yeah, they do this every year. They have an art contest. They let people vote on the art, and then the winner they put on the can for a season.
Why aren't you on the can?
can you draw me and get me in there?
Well, you have a head, and put that cartoon head on the can.
Yeah,
I think we know people.
Just slap it on there.
Somebody please design us a PBR Lord Taco can. I'm begging you. We'll submit it for the art project, and then maybe this time next year you're going to be on the PBR can.
Man, that'd be great.
That would be pretty great.
That'd be better than me on the milk carton.
It would be one of those moments where Taco look around like, yeah, I'm done here. Check.
Yeah.
I don't need to do anything else in my life.
I'm done. The Lord Taco PBR collectible can.
Oh, God, that swells my heart. Just thinking about it, I'm so excited. Please, somebody do that for us.
I think
it would taste a little bit better with my face on it.
I'm not sure I could drink it. I just have to stare at it.
I'll be totally honest with you. I don't really, as much as I love you, I don't want anything of Lord Taco that close to my mouth.
Nor should you.
Yeah. That's true. I don't know where this has been.
Probably you do.
Yeah, you probably do.
Yeah. What's the born on date on this thing?
Well, that's exciting news.
That would be a bucket list item for Taco. I can't believe I'm saying this, and I don't want to bring it up. And when I say I don't want to bring it up, I absolutely want to bring it up.
guys, I hit a Mount Rushmore. A Mount Rushmore of my life 2 weeks ago. Actually, 2 weeks ago yesterday. I became best friends with Bill Murray.
I know. We saw pictures.
Yeah. We talked about it.
We talked about it. And
did
and,
you?
Taco pointed out that it didn't look like the normal selfie where, you know, you ambushed him and he was not happy about it. It actually looked like you were having a conversation.
We had a long, long conversation, and I'll just tell you my Bill Murray story really quickly because I love telling this story. So we're at the Phoenix show, and I'm talking to the guy after the show from Phoenix, the bass player from Phoenix, and he's a sweetheart, and I love this band so much. So we're just chit-chatting about the band and going back and forth, and he looks over my shoulder and goes, "Oh, look, there's Bill Murray." And I go, no, it's not. Give me a break. Bill Murray is not here. I'm not even turning around to justify what you just said. He goes, no, seriously. Not again, pal.
Not again.
And then he goes, no, seriously, it's Bill Murray. And I turn around. I see Bill Murray. I turn back to the Phoenix guy. I said, see you later. And I run to Bill Murray. And so we get to Bill, and he's like, he's getting manhandled by this woman. And she just won't let him out of her grasps, right? So he talk. And so I'm not going to interrupt them. So we take a lap around the room. We come back to Bill Murray. And by that time, there's these dudes who are like bro dudes. And they break up the conversation. They're, you know, being jerks. And then Bill Murray gets the wife, my wife, to take a picture of them. And, you know, she cracks a joke, makes Bill Murray laugh. And that gives us the end to go after Bill Murray. And so we start talking, and I can't explain to you. It's like he was right out of Central Casting. If somebody were to cast Bill Murray, he's the perfect Bill Murray. He's everything that you think that he is. He's charming. He's hysterical. So I start just cracking jokes. I call him Prime Minister. Nice to meet you, Prime Minister. People walk up to him. I'm like, this is Gary Murray. Don't tell anybody. And he starts to really start cocking his head. It's like, what is going on with this dude? And then finally, I start petting him. He's wearing a very fluffy shirt. So I'm petting him. And I look at he looks at me. He's like, what are you doing? I was like, I'm petting Bill Murray. You can't wear a fluffy shirt if you're Bill Murray, because everyone will want to pet Bill Murray. And he just loses it. And every time he would leave, he'd come right back to me and he'd hold his arm out and say, "Do you want to pet Bill Murray?" And I, yes, I do. Yes, I would like to pet Bill Murray. And so then we struck up another conversation. We talked about Letterman, of course, you know, my hero in life. And we talked about golf. We talked about his first pitch at the Cubs game years ago. He throws the ball over the fence. You know, we talked a good half an hour. And I just had this moment of like, I was in awe the rest of the night. The rest of the night I just kept spinning around saying to myself, I cannot believe and the thing I didn't tell him, you see all these posters behind me. Well, the one that's hanging in my house in Chattanooga right now is a poster of Bill Murray. I've got a Bill Murray poster in my house, and on the bottom it says, "Ladies and gentlemen, Bill Murphy," signed Dave Letterman. And, you know, he's just been on a Mount Rushmore of my life since the moment I ever saw him on Letterman. So, so with all of that being said, Barry, you know me well enough. There's only one left. There's only one more left. Who is it?
I think you just said his name.
It's Dave. Yeah. I only need one more, and I'll be Lord Taco happy. Check me out of this life. I'm good to go. I only need Dave, and I've got the Mount Rushmore of human beings that I have been able to meet in my life, and that's. I can't believe it. I just can't believe it. And when you think about all the, like, the crazy Bill Murray stories that you've heard, right?
Right.
When, you know, he shows up at a frat party and starts doing dishes, right. You know? I had a guy, he walks up to somebody and takes a bite out of their hamburger and just walks away. You know, like, I know some of these have, like, created their own living legend.
Right.
But it's because he's that character. He's exactly that person. And so one time I heard the story from a buddy of mine who goes, He goes, I was standing at this, I can't remember where he was, like the map room or chart room. I mean, it was map room in Chicago. And all of a sudden he had these hands go over his eyes from behind. And whispered into his ear, the guy behind him says, "This is Bill Murray. No one will ever believe you." Takes his hands away, turns around and sees Bill Murray just walk away from him. I mean, he's just that kind of guy. And he's exactly that person when you meet him. I've been giddy for 2 weeks ever since.
That's cool. When I saw the pictures, I think I told Taco, I said, I'm not surprised. It seems like something Bill Murray would do. He loves that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it was totally, he does. Totally appropriate. Yeah,
it's awesome.
It wasn't just a photobomb. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Good for you.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, I mean, if you see Bill Murray, you have to figure out a way to get a picture, and I just didn't want to do the regular, I don't know.
I'm not sure I would have laid hands on him, but good for you.
Yeah, I don't know if a petting was where I would go.
I wouldn't advise it for most people.
Well, let me, okay. Do you think that he's going to remember the PBR guy or the guy that pet him randomly on a Friday night?
You're lucky there wasn't, you know, authorities called. Yeah. He touched me.
He found it to be a kick.
You said it right there. That's my, people always ask me if I got autographs or whatever, you know, and I'm always like, if I feel like they connected, like they're going to remember me, it's memorable. Otherwise, you know.
Yeah. I've never really been a picture guy. I've never really taken these moments to sort of document, because they're more fun when I get to tell you guys, right? Yeah. Like the moment is so much more important than a picture. I guess because I live in the world of radio, and I just like having a story to tell instead of a picture to show. Like, that picture does me no good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you have a story now, I have a story, but I got to talk to Lucinda Williams 2 weeks ago.
Oh, I love Lucinda Williams.
Couldn't get her off the phone, man. We laughed. We started. In fact, I quit recording. We just started talking. It was really cool.
That's great.
Yeah.
She's such a sweetheart too, isn't she?
She's so great. She laughed and it's the same thing.
She has a great giggle.
Yes. It's a hearty, real, honest laugh.
Uh-huh.
It was really cool.
At this point in her life, she's a grandmother, right?
Oh, I don't know about that. I don't know. I don't think so.
Did you pet her?
Zoom.
he breathed heavy.
Yeah.
She talks about her dad a lot, which is really cool. Her dad very influential in her life, so that was cool. And then,
is that an age thing though? Do you get to a certain age and then you start talking about your parents a lot because you probably become the parental unit that you always saw as a child?
Well, you know, he was a poet, and she's written a song about a musical artist that he would take her to go see when he would play in New Orleans. And so that's what triggered it. But I've talked to her twice now. She grew up in a lot of places. She lived in New Orleans for a while. She lived in Macon when she was little. She's in Nashville now. Yeah, I know. She used to come up to Chattanooga. Rock City. Loved it. Loved it. She and her siblings were kids. The dad would bring them up here. So
I think about Rock City a lot when I, it's very Mad Men. You know, I think about Don Draper and those episodes of him just getting in the car and going on like road trips with the kids. You know, back in the 60s, in the late 60s, Barry, you know it, you were 40. In the late 60s, early 70s, you get in the car and you drive in these roadside attractions that are not around anymore. You know, Rock City was way up there, right? That was the place where you stopped and just let the kids do something for a few hours instead of sitting in the car.
That's right. And
we don't have any of those anymore.
Marketing. I mean, those barns. I mean, it's crazy. Everybody knows about Rock City.
Mm-hmm.
See seven states. I was
there. Stop it! Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yep. See seven states.
So what all have I missed in the last few weeks? I feel like there's so much to catch up on.
Go ahead. Talk.
Okay, sounds good. All right.
Good talk.
No, we were geared up to talk to a bunch of bands on Sunday for Moon River, and then the storm came, got rained out, got canceled.
It was fun. It was fun to be able to go to a festival. Saw several, you know, Bonnaroo friends.
Yeah, we had a mini Bonnaroo reunion.
Mini Lindsay and Zach and Daniel and Sharla and who else? Dewar was there. Chrissy was there.
Yeah, Dewar. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And then rained out, and we, you know, we did last week's podcast on that. Oh, by the way, I mean, you and I haven't spoken, and I'm glad we are, because we made the point, I hope, in that podcast of, you know, this was Live Nation, C3, and AC getting it right. My daughter got her refund yesterday. So what is that, 9 days, 10 days? You know, after the cancellation, already has her refund for half. That's pretty good. That's real good. You know, we picked on them and picked on them, so they got it right.
Yeah, and I think that along the way, I think you start realizing the reason why they're able to do something like this is because of the very thing that we all complain about.
Yep.
Because they're so big, they're able to take... Take something like this on the chin.
No question. Yeah, it doesn't happen if it's a, you know, small outfit.
If it's Barry and Brad's festival.
Yeah. If it's
with Lord Taco as our beer vendor, yes. We're not really taking the hit.
Yeah.
Every can has my face on it.
Yeah. So that's the plus side of having a Live Nation behind it. But also, as I was told by several people, they learned their lesson, you know.
What lesson?
Well, you know, with Bonnaroo, there was talk and certain complaints that the communication wasn't great.
Oh, yeah, okay.
It took forever to get refunds. You know, it just, the things that you and I and Taco, we've all bragged about for four and a half years, they seem to kind of lose their way a little bit. You know, by focusing on the fan experience is what it seemed to be. And, man, they seemed to get it right. Wouldn't you agree, Russ? I mean, that was...
Absolutely. They did everything right. They didn't even have to give refunds.
Yeah, not like that. And it wasn't just 50% of your, or a full refund, if it was one day, of your ticket. It was fees and all. So, I mean, they really... granted, it's a much smaller festival. It's a singer-songwriter festival. You know, it had some things different than Bonnaroo, but it was essentially the same people running it.
Who did you miss on Sunday after it got canceled?
Band of Horses, Leon Bridges.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Well, there was like three bands that played, and then they had to cancel. It was right in the middle of Sammy Ray's set, and then she was the one we were scheduled to talk to later that afternoon.
Yeah, we had interviews lined up with Sammy Ray, Wildorado, and Ben from Band of Horses. So it was just disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it was, you know.
Nobody more disappointed than a Mr. Brian Stone, who is a massive Band of Horses fan, and called me in a fit of rage because I had so much material, bro.
He did work. He is
so excited. Work. Ready to go for Ben.
The one time he does research.
Actual work.
The one time he knows what he's talking about.
Exactly. He'd put in some good research and was ready and had questions and everything, and it didn't happen. But like I told Taco, I mean, you know, it'll pay off. We'll talk to him somewhere down the line. They'll remember. They actually reached out. His management reached out that Sunday afternoon to see if we could meet somewhere. And so they were, you know, it was all. Everything
oh, that's
was
nice.
Cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Everything was cool. The whole thing, mm-hmm. other than the weather, you know, mm-hmm. it's just a really,
it went from a real downer, you know, thinking that all this is canceled to actually being a really good time and a good story.
And a lot of that's got, I got to imagine is thanks to Drew Holcomb, huh?
No question.
Oh, yeah.
That was mentioned several times by a couple of people in our podcast that, you know, having somebody who is the face and the curator is different. And he's also a nice guy. You know, you'll hear in the interview that we're about to play with Wild Rivers. It was actually, and I had forgotten this, his son was born the weekend of Moon River, the first year they came.
The first year, yeah.
Ellie was very pregnant, sang, and then went home and had a baby, literally. And they held his fourth birthday party backstage where we were doing our interviews. So
yeah,
here clapping and cheering and singing. And
well, I'll let Lord Taco be the judge on whether or not they had a baby or not. That's his department.
There were a couple of he identified a couple of babies.
That did you?
Saturday. Babies there, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Okay, just to clarify, because I mean, Lord Taco is the expert at identifying babies. Are there any babies on this call right now?
No.
Wow. See, I would have guessed differently.
He's 100%.
I can't believe it.
He's 100%.
You've never gotten it wrong. I mean, it's no. You're in the Hall of Fame of identifying babies.
All I have to do is see it, and then I can tell you if it's a baby or not.
Didn't tell you it's a baby. I don't know how you do it. Yeah. I don't know how you do it. All right.
He knows his beer, and he knows his babies.
Yes, he does know beer.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro. Easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
So are we in the world where it's Bonnaroo rumor season yet? Are we in rumor chatter season?
I think so.
We're close.
Can someone tell me who the rumored headliners are? Do we have anything like that yet?
That'd I don't know if there's any big rumors or not out yet.
Okay.
Well, Rage.
We were hoping you'd tell us.
Got to be Rage, right?
Rage, yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't know why not. Yeah. I've made my demands.
Demands, that's right. I told everybody on the show last week that the reason you were not around was because you were on a hunger strike, that you hadn't eaten red meat since you made your demands. So.
For the years, yes, that's right. I've been making demands for 13 years.
That's right.
I did find out who the Saturday headliner is, and I'm pretty sure the Friday late night was told to me as well. They don't know if it was definitely Friday late night or if it's the closer on Friday or on Sunday rather. So I don't know, and I don't necessarily feel the most comfortable saying it out loud just yet. But boy, if that rumor mill was going around, we really could make that a lot easier, this conversation. Right. But I'll just put it this way: the Saturday headliner is going to be massive. And then the Friday late night is everything that we've wanted for years, or at least Barry's wanted for years. And it's a perfect, perfect combination. And these two bands alone, I think, make the Bonnaroo faithful very, very, very happy.
Yeah, good. Yeah. I'm excited from what you told me. I also wanted to say I had some folks reach out. I'm going to talk next week with some folks with Live Nation, and they have some prizes, some plans they're working on, and we're going to hopefully set up a podcast. So,
okay,
looking forward to having
surprises, as in like campsite adjustments,
I'm not
or
exactly
on.
Sure, it was very short note. Just basically, okay, can we talk next week about some things we've got in the works and perhaps do a podcast. So
okay,
I was thrilled that they reached out and
it's lovely
to talk about it. Yeah, I'm very excited about it. So I hate to tease like that, but I don't know any more than that yet. So
the other thing that I was going to ask, we did an event a couple weeks ago, maybe a couple months ago. I was talking to their managers, and we were just over some beers, and that birthed this idea of let's have the Smashing Pumpkins on a tiny stage in New York and do it all for free. The radio station was going to go through a couple of different things that didn't pan out, but the show remained, and we had it last Thursday. The thing that I was thinking about this whole time during the show was, someone fact checked me, has Smashing Pumpkins never been to Bonnaroo?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. And that kind of like took me back for a second. I can't really understand why.
I don't know.
This is one of the bands on the Mount Rushmore of rock music, and yet no Bonnaroo. And frankly, I don't know if I remember any real festival they've been on before. Maybe it's just a Billy Corgan thing. Now, when you start thinking that they have a new album coming out that has 33 tracks, you know, that they're putting it out in three parts, and it comes out all by April, I got to imagine that, you know. Yeah. Well, why would Smashing Pumpkins not be on their radar for Bonnaroo? That show is fantastic. Now, I know a lot of Smashing Pumpkins diehards get a little irritated because the set list doesn't really ever change, but I don't care. I'd never seen them before. Can you believe it? One of the great bands of all time, and I had never seen Smashing Pumpkins, and it didn't even occur to me that I had never seen them until, like, Wednesday.
Yeah, when you say that, I don't remember seeing them on other festival lineups either. I don't know. Maybe they just don't do a lot of that sort of thing. I don't know. You know, we've always said it's all about timing and availability and all that. So I don't know. I don't think they've ever been there, though. I can't recall seeing them on a lineup.
Yeah, man, that show was so good. Yeah. Oh, God, it was good. All right. The other thing that we never got to was the Woodstock documentary. I finally watched that, Dad. I finally watched it.
What'd you think?
I liked it better than the other one. I liked it better because it felt not as, I don't know, maybe I felt like it was less accusatory and put everything on the bands, and that they sort of expanded sort of the blame a little bit. But also the part that I think that I take away from it the most, people really had a good time. Aside from the people who had their complaints, everybody in that documentary that they asked, but would you do it again? Yeah. Yeah, I want to. Was it one of the great weekends of your life? Yeah. Yeah, it was. I mean, bringing it back to Brian Stone, he was there too, and he remembers it being a struggle, but one of the best weekends of his life.
Yeah. Well, it's pretty epic. I mean, it's pretty memorable, I would have to believe. I could see that. Once it was over and you were past it, I could see that being part of it. The things that stood out to me, and I forgot that we hadn't talked about it, was how much just the opposite of what we were saying about Moon River, the fan experience, the fan was not, you know, considered. And so how far festivals came, if that was 99, Bonnaroo started in 2001, right? One or two. So 3 years later, yeah, it was two. So 3 years later, you know, they go from basically that shit show on a tarmac, you know, nothing but concrete and asphalt, not enough bathrooms, not enough food, not enough water, you know, all of those things, to, you know, Bonnaroo had its issues the first year too, but it was good enough that people wanted to go back, and they continue to fix it. That, and the other thing that stood out to me, and I had asked you if your wife Hillary had seen it, I remember thinking just how different women, females, have been treated. I mean, they were treated so badly at Woodstock, you know, per both of those documentaries. And I know there have been issues at Bonnaroo. Anytime you get that many people together and alcohol, there's going to be some issues. But I remember second or third year there just thinking, how different everything was in that regard. You know what I mean? It was nothing for a female to go to a show by herself, whereas just a few years earlier, you would have never, you know, done that because guys are just pigs, basically.
I think that you breed brand values. You determine what you want your brand values to be, and the audience will follow you. So if you espouse a certain level of, like Bonnaroo does, positivity, hope, inclusiveness, then that's what you're going to get from the audience. If you breed commercialism, you know, that's what you're going to get from the audience. So your mission statement means a lot to even from 2000 to now. And I think that the other thing too, that these things have benefited from is failure. They failed a lot in 99. And frankly, you know, I bet Bonnaroo would even tell you, and our guys that we've talked to in years past have sort of hinted at it. Failure really sort of fixes a lot of blind spots.
Sure.
You know, that complete rainout in 2004 that, you know, was an epic disaster at Bonnaroo turned out to be the reason why they made all the improvements on the farm, and the reason probably why they maybe not the reason, but a reason why they bought the place so they could never have to worry about having a complete disaster that was that rainout in 2004, which, by the way, we will be talking about a lot in the coming weeks and months, because 2004 will be on somebody's mind. I don't know how to say this without giving it away. Anyway, just remember the rain out in 2004, because it's going to be a big part of the conversation come the spring while we're talking about Bonnaroo 2023.
Very cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't want to give too much away because it will probably be my Christmas present to Barry.
It's a good one then. you're my hero.
So I think that the Bonnaroo people were very smart in that, and maybe the Coachella people too, we just don't know them as well. They were so smart to pay attention to all of the problems, because you could have saw that and said, no, we're done. There's no possible way we're going to put ourselves in this position. Frankly, how they even got an insurance policy after seeing the disaster but by the way, it wasn't supposed to be Bonnaroo. It was supposed to be Kukachu. What the hell was it originally?
Ichiku.
And it didn't work.
Well, it was Ichiku, which was an AC thing. And then when Superfly reached out to Ashley at AC, they were going to do Bonnaroo. The reason it's in Manchester is because Ashley had done Ichiku and knew the farm, knew it would work. So, I mean, I don't think it was always supposed to be Ichiku, because Ichiku was not hugely successful.
I've got a whole dog pile sitting in my lap right now. I wish I could show you the faces that are bothering the hell out of me right now. Guys, what do you want from me? I can't do anything for you right now. I have to give all my attention to Barry and Taco, not you two. I'm sorry. Yeah, sorry about them. But yeah, I like this. Sorry, excuse me. I like the second one so much better. I mean, it was essentially the same story, but I just felt as though it was a little bit better of a, telling of the story and, you know, associating blame sort of everywhere, not just on the artists. I felt like the artists got a lot of the bum rap the first go around.
They did. And I don't remember who, maybe it was Pondo, pointed out that they really focused on just the one stage. There were two stages there, and we never really saw much from the other stage.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know what was going on there, but
yeah, and I also appreciated the way that they told it. Like, they put the plot out. They explained to me what the lay of the land was better than the first one. I didn't really know anything about that hangar. I didn't really know how everything was set up. And the way that this podcast started was because we were obsessed with, you know, cords. Right. On the farm and how they built a festival site. I look at that festival site that they explained in that second documentary, and I just say to myself, Ugh.
Yeah, I know.
Ugh.
That's what I
mean.
That
sounds awful.
3 years. 3 years later, it went from, you know, that to, you know, the beginning of what we know now. Like I said, they didn't get it all right that first year at Bonnaroo, but they got it pretty close.
Well, the other thing too is like back in that day, so it was 2003. I went to Music Midtown in Atlanta, and it was the exact same thing. It was just a big parking lot.
Yeah.
Oh, it was miserable.
Yeah.
Miserable.
Yeah. No, the fan experience, that's what, I mean, like you said, that's why we started the show, and that's what we focus on. That was what was fascinating to me, to think about that it seemed so, so long ago, but in a way it wasn't, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I remember in the first years, and I think that we'll probably talk more about those early years in the coming months, but I remember, because I had never really camped before, I remember thinking that I needed to come with like a bow and arrow.
I agree.
I was going into the wilderness, and I had no idea what I was doing. Like, I need to take a toolbox in case I need to build a shed or something. I don't know what I was thinking, but I really came with all of these expectations of... I might die here.
No, I was petrified that first year. I'm with you. I tried to think through, toolbox, you know, everything. More food than you could possibly eat in 4 days, you know, because you're going to the moon, basically. Is what it felt like.
It did. And I love the kids now that go, and they're on their third, fourth, fifth Bonnaroo. And I'm not trying to be back in my day, kid, but man, in 2003, my first Bonnaroo, I just looked around thinking to myself, when I prepared for it, what do I do? I don't know anything about any of this. How do I even? Yeah, it's like going to the moon. Yeah. It's like, well, what do I take to go to space?
I need everything. Yeah.
I need everything. I got to take everything.
Yep.
Yeah, I might as well pack up my cat.
Yeah.
What do I do?
Oxygen. You need it all. Yeah. You forget that there's people around you that are going to have it. And like I said, they've developed too. They, you know, and we leave, you know, we can actually leave and go to Walmart if we have to. That's another thing that's changed. So
I don't remember that Walmart existing, by the way, in 2003.
I don't know if it did or not.
I don't remember anything existing, by the way. Nothing about that space is the same as it was in 2003.
True.
Except for maybe the Waffle House. I think the Waffle House is still there.
True. Yeah. Anyway, it was interesting to see that and consider how things have changed and developed. So
yeah,
I'm glad. You
all right. What else? What else is in going on? What's going on in Taco's life? What have I missed?
Just a lot of. Car stuff
and streaming and Twitch streaming.
Yeah, I've been doing Twitch.
Barry, have you been watching his show yet? Have you been watching the thing?
I watched a little bit. I sure did, and I'm with you. I don't get it.
I don't get it, but I feel like it is like the best public access late night TV show. Yeah. I'm obsessed with it. I feel like
that's really what it is. Yeah.
What was that guy?
We just celebrated 420 followers. That's the weed number.
Yes, we know that that's the weed number. It reminds me so much of like early Tom Green.
Yeah.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah,
I just love it so much. It's so goofy, and I have no idea what I'm watching. I really have no idea what I'm watching, but I'm into it every time. So, what is this interview that we're going to put on, Barry? Who are we talking to?
Wild Rivers. What was it? Yeah, they were great. They're Canadian originally, and they fascinating. They are now Devin is moving to Los Angeles. Khaled is moving to Nashville, and Andrew Wright is going to stay in Canada, and they're going to be a band. Mm. So we talked about that a little bit.
I mean, it's not uncommon. No. We had Daniel from Interpol come by the station the other day, and that's how they operate.
Yeah, I know.
You know, I asked him straight up. I was like, I mean, are you guys friends? He's like, well, yeah, but as much as friends can be when we live in seven different time zones.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's not that unusual. But they don't plan to record separately. They want to be together when they record because they did
all I that. I'm actually glad you brought that up because the thing that is so charming about Phoenix is that, which by the way, I did an interview with Phoenix that you can go back and watch on the station website or something. But the thing that's so charming about Phoenix is that they've been around 25 years. They were best friends then, and they're still best friends. They vacation together. They all live near each other. And, you know, he's married to Sophie Coppola. You know, I mean, it's
yeah.
So, and they're all just, you know, hanging around the family. Yeah. You know, the kids are. And I asked him straight, Tomas. I asked him. I said, "Is it kind of weird that somebody like me brings up the fact that you guys are best friends so often? It kind of feels like you're the unicorn. You're the white unicorn of the music industry, and that you're the only band that hangs out and they're friends and that vacations together." He's like, "Yeah, it feels kind of strange because it always feels like that was what it's supposed to be, and you just don't see it very often."
There aren't many. You too, I know. Those guys are all same. They're all friends and vacation together and hang out. So I've read. They you know didn't tell me personally, but it is rare, and it's. You know, you got to like each other. That's one of the things that...
I don't know if you do.
Well, it's one of the things we talk with Matt Carney about. You know, you got to be on the road. He's like, you know, you might be a really good guitar player for 90 minutes, but I got to see you the other 22 and a half hours. So,
you know, maybe it's a status level. Maybe you have to get along when you are, you know, a mid-tier act, but... You know, it's not like the Black Keys get along.
Yeah, well, Oasis, the Kinks. Yeah, I know. There's all kinds of examples. But, I mean, if you're going to spend that much time with somebody, but moving that far away, I mean, we kind of joked about it with the guys from Wild Rivers. If they couldn't pick, you know, any farther apart, any places
it's,
on the
it's
planet.
Almost as if it was it's almost as if it was on purpose.
Exactly. Yeah.
Can I get as like, far away from you as possible?
The furthest I could move. Yeah.
And how you know,
how's Alaska this time of year?
And what's that tour gonna look like? Where are you gonna meet in the middle? They kind
of
laugh.
Man, I've been looking at this piece of property in Russia. That
it was kind of funny. They were super nice and like I said, you'll hear Drew and Ellie having the birthday party. They had a three-legged race and did all kinds of stuff. That was kind of cool.
Yeah, our interview got kind of crashed by a four-year-old's party.
Yeah, that was all right, though. That was a lot of fun. Yeah. And once again, well, as we said before, Brian Stone was a huge help. And everybody was. I mean, everybody was, you know, it's funny. We've talked about how you get all stressed about these things because you're not sure if you're going to get access and what access and all that, but it always works out better than you hope. So thanks to all those people.
You guys are the stress balls. Not me. I don't,
oh, I know.
You guys,
well, we had the jitters right before everything, you know, cause weren't sure if we're going to get this or that. And of course it all worked out. So,
and yeah, loading equipment and all, I mean, it's, you know, it's just, there's logistics, but Sue Marcus with the PR stunt, she was great and lined everything up, and Hannah, I mean, it was, you know,
dad got taken care of. Everybody took care of dad.
They really took care of dad. Yeah.
Okay, good.
Everything worked out.
As long as they should.
Yeah.
I feel like one of these days you're just going to ask for like a wheelchair that you get somebody to just wheel you around, and a motorized wheelchair. You'd be great with that.
You know, I got the golf cart at Riverbend.
Uh-huh.
I got golf carted around all over. That was pretty sweet. Uh-huh. I kind of was kind of waiting for that at Moon River. Never happened. No.
Well, you know, just start pointing at your hip. Just a bad hip.
I know.
Bad hip.
Next year.
Okay. Yeah, all right, let's get into the Wild Rivers thing. And after that, we'll talk to you soon.
A lot of people live in denial because they think that to be realistic is to be depressing.
I'm Dr. Mike, host of Going There.
It was the first song where I wrote about how I felt like my depression was killing me and I didn't want it.
Going There breaks the stigma of mental health issues by having real, honest conversations with your favorite musicians, including Alessia Cara, Lizzie Hale, Jewel, Jason Isbell, Gerard Way, Lauren Gray, Shamir, and Bartee Strange.
there was something there that was so raw where I was like, wow, I can't believe someone would say that.
Let's go there on Going There with Dr. Mike, brought to you by Sound Mind Live and the Consequence Podcast Network, every other Tuesday, wherever you get your podcasts.
You guys just finished your set. Did you have a good time?
Yeah. It was awesome. Big old crowd, people up on the bridge singing along. It was super fun.
Have you been to Chattanooga before?
I don't think so. I think this is our first time here.
You guys are from Canada.
Toronto, Canada, right? Yeah.
Is that still home?
Yeah, home for most of us. Cal's making a move to Nashville and Dev's making a move to LA, but I'm keeping the home base.
You couldn't find any farther points?
We're trying to be international. We got outposts everywhere, and we'll slowly take over the world, is our plan.
What's taking you to LA first?
Mostly the weather. Mm-hmm. Canadian winters are not something that I was built for, despite being Canadian. Also just the music industry, the water, the hiking, all that stuff.
Is there something specific about LA, or are you just, I'm leaving Canada and this
I think
is where I
just
go?
I meet so many creative people there. So many songwriters move down there, and I don't actually know that many musicians in Toronto anymore, so it's such a good creative hub for me to be able to collaborate with people, and it's very inspiring. And we've all spent time as a band down there. We lived there for 4 months while we were writing our album, so we're familiar with it, and I just loved it, so I wanted to stay.
And yet you chose Nashville.
Yeah, I like LA too. I like the vibe. I think I prefer the vibe of Nashville, and that I grew up in a small town, and it's a very small town, and you run into everybody you know at every bar, every coffee shop, and people are just really chill, down to earth, but incredible songwriters. So
have you driven in Nashville?
Oh yeah. Well, if you've never driven in Toronto, Nashville is a cakewalk.
Oh wow.
Toronto is
interesting. Okay.
from 2 to 6 p.m. every day, you're not getting anywhere. So everyone says the Nashville traffic is bad, but I'm very used to it.
Wow. That tells me all I need to know about Toronto.
Yeah. That's the one big downfall with the Toronto and the cold weather in the winter. But we love home too.
And you're staying?
Staying.
I assume you guys are going to stay as a band. Have you talked about how you're going to make this work?
Yeah, I think we're just going to plan to get together before tours and when we're recording and make kind of little vacations out of writing trips and stuff like that.
I mean, a lot of bands do it. It's not unprecedented.
The reality of it is that we're never home anyways. So even us changing locations, like we've been on tour this entire year. So having a home base is a little less relevant because we're always doing stuff together all the time, whether we're making a record, whether we're touring. So yeah, I don't think it will be too tough.
Let's go back a little bit. You guys started in 2016, right?
Mm-hmm.
What was the first of all, how'd you get together? I'm always kind of fascinated. Was it a 8.5 by 11 poster on a telephone pole or an ad in a magazine? Yeah, or did you know each
for
other?
Singer. We went to school. Devin and I went to school in a college town a couple hours outside of Toronto called Kingston. We went to university there, neither of us studying music, but both interested in music. And we were both from the Toronto area. And my neighbor in first year, the girl next door to me in my dorm room, said, "You have to meet Devin. She's an incredible singer. I know you're like looking to do music stuff." So we kind of got introduced. And I was working on songs, and Dev was wanting to start a project too. So we kind of just started singing together, and instantly it was super natural. We liked all the same music and kind of blended in a very easy way. So we kind of rolled with that all of university, playing coffee shops, bars, any gig we could, doing little tours, slowly focusing less on our studies and more on the music. And then by the time we graduated, we're like, let's make a go of this and record an album. So we used all the money that we had made from our bar gigs to go towards our first record. And during that time, we wanted to flesh out the song. So we built up the band for the record, which included Andrew. And we started working on that record, and then it felt really good. And it kind of turned into a band project, and turned, we all played shows together, and the, it was more than just a duo thing. So that's when Wild Rivers itself really started.
At the point when you said, I think this is the trio, this is who we are, this is the trio, we want to do this, what was the goal? I mean, when you sat down, I assumed you had a sort of meeting and said, what do we want our sound? Where do we want to go? What's the direction for the band? What was that conversation?
I don't know if we've ever had like explicit musical goals. We're lucky that we have all the same tastes and we like a whole bunch of different music. Our goal with the music is just to have serve the song, song-based writing.
Party.
Like,
all right.
Whoa! We love music! Oh!
I don't know if you guys can see it on the camera, but Ellie Holcomb just arrived. I seen one of their children. It must be a birthday.
This is exciting.
All right, we may have a happy birthday right there. Yeah, okay.
Cute.
So we might have to talk over them a little
bit. No, that's okay.
That's cool. That's neat.
But I was saying just our musical, specifically what we're doing musically, we've allowed ourselves to draw outside the lines and not really be tied down to, we're going to be this Americana band. Like, we want to make whatever music that we're feeling at the time, and we have career goals and playing festivals like this and playing our dream venue in Toronto, Massey Hall, was a big goal that we just did this year. So it's only in recent years that we're kind of realizing some of our big band goals, which is awesome.
Has that changed at all? I mean, as you've grown, do you now sit and talk more specifically about what you want to do next?
Every few years we'll kind of check in with each other and be like, okay, this is working to a certain extent. This is the direction we're moving in. What do we want out of this? And how can we kind of like narrow our focus to get there? But I think since we started, we were just kind of trying to make music and trying to play shows, and whatever that meant, we were happy with it. So as it has started to evolve, it's allowed us to kind of like expand what our goals actually are, because we were always just thinking about what was right in front of us, like, okay, this next tour, how can we make this the best tour we can, how can we make this record sound how we want it to sound. And I think that maybe is why things have worked for us, because we're kind of focused on the music and focused on the shows, and keeping those authentic and consistent, and that has opened up some doors for us, which has been great.
When you play a festival like this, that has to kind of help, right? It's got to be a boost.
It's the best. We love it. This is what we want to do. Like, this is what one of the goals we wrote down when we started the band was, to play outside the packed crowd, people singing our songs. And that happened today. It was amazing. It's so fun, and I don't think it will ever get old.
Another big goal for us, which has just recently been unlocked, was we always wanted to tour in some kind of bus situation. And this is our first like time in a bus. So we just woke up outside of the stage here, and it's a beautiful thing.
How does that work, or how's it gonna work? LA, Toronto.
It's gonna be a long pickup route.
Yeah.
I think we'll probably fly to one central location, yeah, and then start the bus from there.
Yeah, I figure.
All of our families are from Toronto, so like we're gonna be home kind of all the time as well, and we all love each city that we're in, so we'll see. Maybe a little LA trip before the next tour, Nashville trip.
A lot of Zoom meetings, that kind of thing?
Hopefully not. We kind of did half of our record in the pandemic a lot remotely, because in Toronto the lockdown was so severe that we couldn't see each other for a couple months. And yeah, nobody likes Zoom meetings. No one wants to make music like that. It's honestly pretty hard to that stage of making our record. We were apart, but then we actually went back to the town that we met at university holed up in a studio there and finished the record, which was so much better than sending files back and forth. Like, right. So much of what we do is like a dynamic live thing. So it was nice to actually make music in the same room again.
You talked about being on the bus, and before we actually started recording, I think you were talking about you're excited to go out and watch some music today. So we won't keep you much longer, but who in particular are you looking forward to seeing? And are you going to be here tomorrow as well?
I'm stoked to see The National. They're one of my favorite bands. And Peter Kadis, who produced our last record, produced most of The National's records. So it'll be cool to see them. What about you?
Briston Maroney's great. We've done a few festivals with him this summer, but I haven't actually been able to see the set, so I'm excited for that.
We love Briston.
Yeah, he's awesome.
He's great.
Yeah, Briston is a 3-time guest on our show.
Yeah, no way.
It's technically 2, because I forgot to hit record.
Oh, shit.
Oh, no.
But he's so sweet.
Yeah, he seems like he's forgiving.
Oh, he was so great. He got up, and he had this kind of, I'll do it again. So
run it back.
So we're huge, huge fans.
That's awesome.
Plus, he's from Knoxville, which is not far from here.
Nice.
But, we're fans of his music, but also now he's, he's
kind
of special place. It was a bad day, but it ended up being a good day.
I think we hit record today. I think we did.
Well, at the very least, we had a good conversation.
Yeah,
so
yeah. We appreciate it.
Well, I know you guys want to get out and hear some music. So anything else that you wanted, anything coming up? Where can people see you next? If they're
touring the whole month, every major city in America will be there. This is going to be our last big stretch of touring before we take a break and then go into album mode. So yeah, if you want to catch a Wild Rivers show, look on our website, wildriversmusic.com, and we got a new album too. It's called Sidelines. You can find us on all of the Google things and hopefully see you at a show or listen to the music.
Absolutely.
Cool. Devin, Andrew, Cal, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for doing it.
Thank you.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.